What if I told you you can make 20 times the return of a single family fix and flip on your next big deal? Well, it's actually possible. It's possible inside the world of commercial real estate. Say, I'm inviting you to this free challenge. It starts August 15th. It's totally free. It's a 5-day challenge where I'm going to take you and deep dive into the world of commercial real estate, more specifically, capital multiplier properties. What that is, how we identify them. I'm going to show you how to identify them, how to evaluate them, and how to lock them up risk-free. I'm going to give you all the paperwork to do it. It's totally free. You can sign up to join us at www.20xprofitchallenge.com/realgrit. That's www.20xprofitchallenge.com/realgrit. And I'll see you in the challenge.
It's just that mentality. When you look at your efforts and you go that extra distance, no one else is really doing that. Everyone's going to just do the bare minimum or whatever's required to survive. And I don't want to survive. I want to thrive and succeed and be the exception.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I've got Greg Helbeck here. He's a full-time flipper, wholesaler. He's done over 120 deals in New York, Texas, California. So he runs the gamut here on his locations. He's been acknowledged as one of the top sales trainer over the last few years, who's helped some of the country's biggest real estate teams optimize their sales process. So I'm excited to have him here. Greg, how are you?
Neil, I listen to your show a lot, so it's really cool to be a guest. I love what you got going on here with Real Grit. I love the show. I love the logo. I love everything you got going. So it is really going to be an honor to spend some time with you today.
No, that's very kind of you. I appreciate it. You and I originally connected a few years ago in a sales training, and you made a big impact in my world. And I know you have done so in the world of a whole bunch of other investors who play at a very high level. So I'm appreciative of the work you do and spending a little time here to impact our audience. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Let's go back to the beginning. What was your first entry point into real estate?
Great question. So I was 20 years old. This was some time ago now.
And listen, are you even 30?
I'm not 30 yet.
Yeah, so some
very soon. three more years and I'll be the big 3-0.
Yeah, good.
Looking at social security packages. But so anyway, I went to a seminar and they were talking in Newburgh, where not too far from where I grew up, and they were talking about how to double close a real estate deal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And they're like, so you could buy a house and you can have the buyer pay for it. And then if you get it for cheaper than the buyer, you can make the difference. And they were like to the tune of $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And I go, oh my gosh, I want to do that. So I remember looking, I turned around. I looked at my two friends who were in the seminar with me and I said, I don't care what you guys are doing. I said, I'm going to sign up for the next level course. And if you guys were smart, they already said we can do a 2-for-1 and we can split it. We can probably talk them into a 3-for-1. And my one friend, Kevin, said, no, I don't want to do that. My other friend, Devin, funny, they have names rhymed, said, I'll do it with you. Devin's a millionaire now. Kevin's still very successful. But Devin and I took the leap of faith as two young kids, literally still in college, went to another seminar on, they kind of gave us the mechanics of how to do it. And after that, a second seminar, I went out on my own with Devin, actually, at the time. And we started marketing for deals, putting out signs. I spun my wheels for about 9 months. Ran into a wholesale deal. I think I made like $1,000 or no, the first one was a referral. My friend was like, I need you to take pictures and I'll give you $1,000. So I did that, made $1,000. Then I ran into like a $5,000 wholesale deal. Yeah. And then, you know, kind of stumbled upon the business from there. And I really didn't start making decent money till I was probably 22, I would say. Yeah. 21, 22. I started to do deals consistently. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah. Was there a pivot that allowed you to shift out of struggle into consistent deals?
Great question. So what I think happened is my skills were compounding and I didn't see the results right away. So I was getting these reps in. And in the beginning, when you're brand new to anything, you don't have a lot of skills. You got to learn those skills over time. Right. So I was compounding my skills, like, you know, month after month after month after month, and making offers and getting leads. And then after some time, I started to understand the cause and effect with marketing and prospecting and lead gen. And then, you know, after, you know, 2 years, that momentum really kicked in and I started kind of formulaically being like, okay, if I spend this much time prospecting, it's probably going to yield me this many leads. And then I started kind of reverse engineering my business. And then at that point too, I actually started to do it virtually because I was running into in New York, which is ironically where our main business is based out of now. It was so hard to deal with attorneys and sure. I didn't have a lot of capital at the time. Yeah. So I was running into these roadblocks right. and I said, well, if I can do this in an area that doesn't have attorneys, because I kept coming up with an excuse like, oh, it's so hard with attorneys. I'm like, well, why don't you try it in an area with no attorneys? Yeah. And if it's still just as hard, then you're a jerk. And if it's easier, then you were right. It was actually a lot easier in Texas with no attorneys.
Yeah.
So we started doing business down in Dallas, Texas from like 2018 to 2020. It allowed me to really stack up a lot of capital and then eventually go back into the New York market and start, you know, taking a pretty big market share up there.
Were you buying virtually in Texas?
I was buying virtually, correct. So what my main model was, I was really good at the leads and I was really good at the conversion over the phone. John Martinez had a lot to contribute to that. And I started locking up deals and then I didn't know really how to sell them. So I would partner with someone on a JV basis and he would pretty much wholesale these houses. I would have no involvement whatsoever. I would just collect the half the profit. Yep. And then after doing that, I started saving money up and then we started taking these properties down in cash because in Texas, I mean, it's expensive now, but at the time it really wasn't that expensive.
Right.
We were buying houses for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 grand,
yep.
you know, going in halvesies and you know, doubling our money. And that started to get a lot of traction. And then from there, I started growing the business.
And then at some point you just started doing business in California.
Yeah. So I moved to San Diego after, I moved here in 2018. So I lived in San Diego and I was afraid to do deals because apparently it was so freaking hard, which it is. And I can talk about that. But I was like kind of sitting on the sidelines, doing my business in Texas, doing my business in New York, you know, doing really well. And I was like, you know what? I was like afraid. I'm like, oh, San Diego sellers are so difficult. I don't want to look like a fool, blah, blah, blah. And one day I was having lunch with my friend up in Laguna Beach and he was talking to me about these deals he was doing. And he's a smart guy, but certainly isn't a genius. And I'm like, well, if he can do these deals in California, I can do these deals in California. Started marketing in California. And after committing to doing the business, I got a big wholesale deal out in Spring Valley, which is a San Diego suburb.
Yep.
Then ever since then, I've, you know, I don't do a ton of volume in California, but I do like 6, 7, 8 houses a year and we'll do, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 per deal.
Yeah. You don't need to. Yeah. The profit, the money's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Big spreads here. It's just, it's a different kind of business model out here because it is more difficult to acquire, but if you got a median house price of $1 million in San Diego, you could make a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 profit. And it's really not unreasonable because it's just so expensive.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place. Batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batch Leads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month.
So what are you typically doing there in California? Are they wholesales?
They're wholesales and they will be rehabs if there's that much spread on them. So for example, if I can wholesale a deal and I can make 40, 50 grand without really doing much and it's like unquestionable, then I'll probably lean towards that. But I picked up a condo a couple of months ago and I could have assigned it for like 15 grand. And I was like, I mean, this is a pain in the butt to get this deal. Let me take it to the market. Let me retail it. So I put like 15K into the thing because it was just a small condo.
Yep.
And we ended up selling it and made like $60,000 on that same lead. And I'm like, I could have turned that lead into 15 grand, or I could have done the same thing and pretty much waited 3-4 weeks to do the construction.
Right.
And I made 60 grand on the same exact property. I would have made 15. So it's like, to me, it was a no-brainer.
Talk to me about your ability to shift out of the wholesale into the fix and flip. And then certainly, how do you do that in multiple markets?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way that I do the fix and flip business in terms of doing it virtually, I'll cover that first, is that in every area I will rehab in, like in San Diego, for example, I live here, so I can handle a lot of the construction like oversight because I'm local.
Right.
In New York, I have born and raised there, so I know a lot of people. I'm one of the bigger investors in the area.
Yep.
So I have crews and contractors and people who oversee jobs for me. So in New York, the network and the fact that I'm from there really helps. We just started doing it in Delaware because my acquisitions manager actually lives in Delaware.
Okay.
And the way that I started to do that was, I mean, it's just like any market. You got to call around. You got to find out who has a good reputation, who can do construction the right way. So I ended up going on Thumbtack, which is an app where you can find local handymen to do jobs for you. Yeah. And I just started putting some feelers out there. I ended up interviewing a few contractors. And two of them were complete bozos. And the third one gave me a reasonable quote and was very professional and actually was sending me like invoices, which is like unbelievable.
Unheard of.
Right. Yeah. And then you can pay through like the web. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So hired that contractor. And I think he's finishing up like literally as we're doing this podcast, he's doing the punch list items.
Okay.
And so I found him on Thumbtack. Okay. But the key, if you're doing rehabs in another area, you need to have a boots on the ground person to be able to see those projects, like whether that's a real estate broker or if it's a team member, or if you want to hire somebody on Craigslist or a Facebook group, just to check on these contractors and make sure the scopes are going through. Because if you're just kind of relying on a contractor to tell you if it's going well or not, I would probably not advise you.
It's always going to go well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're on track.
We're on track. Yeah.
I got 7 violations on here from the 10. No, don't worry about it.
I got it handled.
Yeah. Right. No way. No. That's a disaster.
Yeah.
So you got to have boots on the ground. And even if you're wholesaling, you should have boots on the ground, because if you can have someone at that property to sell that house for you, they're representing you, so they can conducting traffic and make sure that no one's going to pull any tomfoolery when buyers try to go behind your back and stuff like that. And we've been there and we know how to handle that.
Exactly. Marketing and consistent marketing is the key to consistent deal flow, lead flow that eventually turns into deal flow. What's your number one way for marketing at this point?
Yeah. So I really love direct mail, and there's a few reasons for that. And the first reason is that I love the fact that you can somewhat set it and forget it. So with texting and calling, which we do somewhat to this day still, it requires a lot of manual labor. It requires a lot of responding and sending these messages out and getting the dialer hooked up and getting the VAs to call. And that just requires a lot of labor. With direct mail, you need to have some capital to do that, but you can basically schedule out a campaign for months in advance and you can have that campaign just go out in batches. So, every single week that mail house is going to be dropping 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 postcards and you can predictably expect your phone to ring. So I like the automation part of it. The second part about mail that I really like is that I like that the people give mail a hard time because they say the calls are crap. But from my experience, the lower response rate you get, the better quality of calls you get, because most people are just going to throw that out if they're not interested.
Correct.
And if they are interested, I mean, they're calling a postcard at a 0.5% response rate. I mean, they're probably calling that postcard for a reason. So a lot of the times they're going to call, they're going to have their guard up. But when you can build a relationship with them and you can really get them to understand that you're there to solve their problem, those are some of the most motivated people, because about all of them, except for a 0.5%, are throwing that marketing message out. So the people who are actually calling in are, somewhat reasonable to having a conversation, because, it's easy to throw out a postcard. You just take it and put it in the trash. If you get a text message, it's kind of inundated. You're like, oh my God, like they're texting, they know my number. So you get a higher response rate, but you get a lot of people who are just jerking your bobber.
Correct.
So I like the mail because you get, quality leads. You can do it somewhat, automated. And I like the fact that you can use the math in direct mail to like almost, I wouldn't say guarantee success, but put success in a high probability if you mail enough units. So for example, I just did a webinar on how to run campaigns. And I was saying, I'm like, if you're mailing 15 to 20,000 people, the odds of that mail campaign performing are very high, because you're going to get a certain amount of calls, most likely, unless you just totally mailed the wrong list, which I covered in the webinar, how to do the right list. And then out of those calls, you're going to get a certain amount of leads. And out of those leads, there's going to be someone over time who's going to sell you a property and you're going to be able to make a profit. So those are the three reasons I really like mail.
Yeah. You know what? It's always a function of timing and circumstance. You indicated that most people throw it away. Totally true. Yeah. Their timing and circumstance changes. It's not like the same person, you know, month after month over the course of a year is throwing them all away. There's certainly a function, some of that, but a percentage of those, life is happening too, right?
Absolutely.
There's a job loss. There's a death. There's a divorce. There's a baby. There is something along the way that life's just happening to. Their timing and their circumstance changes.
Absolutely. And I always say that I tell people this, the best list you can mail is not the list that everyone's talking about. It's the consistency list. Because like you said, they might get on cycle number one, they may not have an indication of selling. But when they get the second piece of mail from you and their tenant stops paying rent, they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to call this person because I want to sell this property. And I'll never forget the 79 Hudson Drive, New Windsor, New York. The lady calls the third mailer. And this is when I was a one-man show. This was a while ago. And she's like, I keep getting your postcards in the mail. Yep. I need to get out of this house in 30 days. I didn't want to sell, but I hate the town and I cannot stand paying the taxes. You got to buy my house yesterday. And we ran right out to that house, locked it up and made like $75,000. And I'm like, if I were to judge my campaign on the first two mailing cycles, it would have sucked.
Yes.
But because we stuck through it and we mailed the third time, and I always encourage people to mail 4, 5, and 6 times if they have budget for that, that zero ROI turned into an 8-to-1 return on spend because we simply just mailed that third cycle out, which yielded us a $75,000 net deal, which was like, you know, unbelievable.
At the end of the day, it's a function of ROI. It's exactly what you just said. It's what are the dollars input in there? You can measure a whole bunch of things. We break it down to the simplest of measurement is what did it cost us? What did it return us?
That's all I care about.
Right. Yeah. 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 No, absolutely right. Talk to me about deal size. It would seem to me like you got New York, you got Texas, and you got California, and there's the two bookends, and then the other piece somewhere in the middle in dollars and cents. How are your geographical locations affecting your deal size?
Great question. So I'll speak about New York because that's our main territory that I know well, and I'm from there and I go there a lot. I still spend a lot of time there. So New York is very expensive, right? Compared to the rest of the country. So in my area, the average sales price is like $400,000-$450,000, which is, you know, a lot of money for most of America.
Right.
So because of that, if you're buying deals at a true discount and you're dealing with properties that are, you know, over 400 grand, you're inevitably going to be able to make more money, especially if you're wholesaling houses or even rehabbing houses, just because the discount on the value is still pretty substantial. And there's usually a six-figure gross spread there. So for example, our average wholesale deal in New York is around $30,000 because of the fact that those properties are going to trade at 400-500 grand when they're rehabbed and ready to go.
Yep.
So what we do, especially to really squeeze a lot of juice out of our wholesale deals, is number one, we got to buy it at the right number. And I have a lot of investors that send me deals. They want me to try to move them for them. And they're just, the numbers are crap. And I'm like, listen, we can try, but you're paying too much for this property. And I know that my list, even though it's a good list, you know, they're not idiots. Like they're not going to buy a deal that, especially now with the time we're recording this, where the market's changed.
Correct.
So number one, you got to get the property at the right number to buy. And then when you're selling, this is where I see a lot of investors screw up big time. And this even is relevant too when you're doing retail flips, is there, you got to price the property to a buyer, no matter who you're, what type of buyer, at a low enough number that intrigues and piques a lot of interest to spike up the demand kind of artificially and then create an auction system. So what we do on our wholesale deals when everything goes well and we have reasonable access is we put the property out at a relatively low number, about $10,000 less than what we really think we can wholesale that for. And what that does is it drives up the response on our email campaigns. And then we drive 10 to 15 buyers into a house. And they're all looking at each other like they're, you know, in like the movie 300 with like swords. And they're like, I want this house. So we don't take offers right away. We say, you're going to go to the house. And we control the entire process.
Yeah.
You're going to go to the house. There's going to be 15 people there. You're going to be able to walk around the home, take anyone you want there with you. You're going to have an hour. And when you're done with that appointment, you're going to get out of that property and you're not going to do any funny business with the seller, or else we're going to sue you for tortious interference. We can talk about that because that happens sometimes.
Yep.
And you're going to reach out to me because I still sit in the disposition seat on my company. Yep. And we're going to field all the offers and we're going to select the highest and best offer. So we lay out the rules with the buyers. 20% of them say, no way, I'm not going to go into a cattle call. And we're like, that's fine. And then, you know, the remaining 80% are going to sharpen their pencil and they're going to come in with a great offer, right? Most of the time, if it's a good price property in a good location. Yeah. So we pent the demand up and we create the scarcity and we let them know they're competing with each other. And if they really want the property, which if it's priced right, they're going to want it.
Yes.
We drive up our wholesale fee. So we did this on a property last month that closed and our goal was to make, I think, 40 grand. And we ended up doing that system I just talked about. And we ended up getting 60 grand out of that same deal.
Incredible.
Which, you know, was great. So it's all about supply and demand, and you got to understand how to control the process with your buyers. It's if you're wholesaling, and if you're retail flipping, same thing. You want to put that property on a market, on the market, especially now where inventory is going up a little bit, to where it's a sexy price for people. Like if everything's trading at 350, 450, let's say everything's trading at 500. If you list your retail flip on the market for 490 and it's done the right way, you're going to get a lot of buyers in the door. And you're going to create a multiple offer situation. You're probably going to go over 500.
Over. Yes.
Oh yeah. Going, as I say, going.
You're totally right. You get the, on the retail side, you get the emotional component relative to a buyer, and you know, this is the one they've seen a bunch of things. They lost other ones. They're seeing dogs on the market, and all the buyers are seeing the same thing. Then you're right. Drives
supply
the price.
Supply and demand. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. Bring me back to talking to a seller. The phone rings. You're conversing with the seller. How, based on the breadth of expertise in the sales process for you, how do you identify motivation and how do you cultivate and lead a seller through a conversation?
Great question. So there's a guy named Brent Daniels out there. I think he was actually on your show.
Brent was, yeah.
And there's literally a fighter jet going over my house right now. So just give me a minute. I don't know if you can hear that, but there's a big Air Force.
It's gone. Yeah.
There we go. You know, America. So what Brett Daniels has, he has this thing called the four pillars, which is a condition, timeline, price, and motivation. Mm-hmm. And we do a similar thing with sellers. So what we do when we process a lead internally as a company, and we want to see if they're motivated or not. I took my like trailing 20 deals. This is a couple of years ago. And I was looking for commonalities. I'm like, well, why did they sell to us? What was going on? What were some indications that, you know, maybe determine them to be motivated or not? And I'm using motivated in like air quotes because you don't need to be motivated. Sometimes you just have to have a good price. So we found there's actually six indicators that will make up a deal. They're a reason for selling. So the seller's got to have a reason for selling. If they're just like, oh, well, I got your postcard and I want to see what your offer is, that might be crap. They might have no intentions on selling. They could be lying. That could be a smokescreen. But generally, the people who we do business with, I want to sell because of X. I'm moving. I inherited this. It's vacant. My tenants have paid.
The reason exists, whether they got your postcard or somebody else's postcard, right? There's something real. Yeah.
There's a real reason for selling their house. Yeah. And it, like I said, it doesn't need to be, I'm desperate, but it's got to be, hey, I'm selling because of insert the blank.
That's right.
The second thing is that generally we've seen with the good deals, there's some vacancy factor going on, whether if it's a two family house, maybe you got one vacant apartment. Maybe it's a single family house and it's inherited. There's no one living there currently. So there's some sort of vacancy thing going on with the property. It's unoccupied. The third thing, this is my favorite, is that they know they can get more if they list it, but they don't want to list it.
But
right?
They don't want
our market, our big deal killer is I'm putting it on the market because it's expensive. And there's savvy people living in my areas. These are smart people for the most part. Most people list their house. So they don't want to list their house for some sort of reason, which is generally the best indication of a deal. The fourth thing is that this is really New York, California specific. Their asking price is below like the Zillow or the Redfin or the Trulia. Yeah. If they're already asking less than what it's quote unquote worth, we like that indication and that's going to check another box for us.
Yep.
The fifth thing is that their timeline is within 6 months or less. So they want to sell within a reasonable timeline. A lot of a month, 2 months. Hey, I want to sell by the summer. I want to sell by the winter. There's some sort of timeline going on. And then the last thing is that the property just simply could use some updating. It doesn't need to be a disaster. I mean, if it's a disaster, usually it's, you know,
better. Yeah.
But it could use some value add. If it's a turnkey property, gut renovated, you know, quartz and, you know, the things beaming, bright, shining, amazingness, there's a low chance we're selling that house they're selling that house at a discount. So in our company, in order for someone to be considered a lead, we call it a net lead, they need to check at least two out of those six boxes, right? At least. Yeah. And if they're not checking two out of those six boxes, we know that statistically they're probably not going to ever sell at a discount. But what you'll find is when people check two or three out of the six boxes, usually there's like four and five too. So like most of our deals, for example, they don't want to list on the market. It needs some sort of update. They definitely have a reason for selling. and their price might be reasonable, right? Less than Zillow. So we just kind of look at those six indications and we see how many boxes that prospect checks off. And then if they check at least two out of those six boxes, we'll continue the process and take them to the next step. If they don't check two out of those six boxes, we'll simply tell them, hey, Mrs. Prospect, I'd love to buy your house, but based on what you're telling us, it doesn't really seem like we'd be the best fit. And that's a version of going negative. Mm. And when you go negative, the prospect either says, you're right, thanks for not wasting my time, or I didn't tell you about the fact that my tenant hasn't paid rent in 5 months. And then, can you tell me more about that? And then you see where, and then we kind of go down the line there.
Yeah. You uncover some other, typically a truth, right?
Every time. A lot of people, you know, are going to call or they're going to find you online and they're going to be like, they have their cards closed. They're just,
what's
your offer? You know, I kind of want to sell my house. And when you pull back a little bit, you know, you can never get hurt because they're either going to confirm your statement there and you're going to find out that you're not a fit, or they're going to say, well, I don't want to list it because my granddaughter's living in here and she's a junkie. And then you're like, oh, okay. How long has that been going on for? Well, and then you can kind of go down the rabbit hole there.
You're into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me about your team structure. What's that look like?
Great question. So it's me. I sit, you know, as the leader of the business, you know, the owner operator. I have a full-time acquisitions person, Brett, who is an absolute critical factor in our business. He's really good at what he does. He's amazing at buying houses and negotiating and following up, all that stuff. And then I have a world-class assistant, Anna, who deals with the transaction coordination. She deals with a little bit of the lead management if needed, if we're getting really swamped. And then, so she deals with the lead management and the transactions. Brett deals with all the front end stuff with the buying of the houses. And then I sit on the back end where I deal with the dispositions, whether they're retail dispositions or wholesale dispositions. And then I deal with the financing and, you know, the overall systems and strategy and things like that.
So you can move mountains with the proper team. Can you not?
I really started getting into this about a year ago and hiring people because it is scary at first.
Sure.
When you have a really solid team, and a lot of people I see, they have these huge teams and that can work. Yeah. I like the small, lean and mean team where everyone makes a lot of money because there's a lot to pass around and everyone can really own their role and almost feel like they're a mini owner of the business. And I found that to be very fulfilling to be able to lead two people and go deep with them versus having, you know, 10 people and not being able to really give the proper time to those team members. And that's at least my experience. I really like the small, lean, mean team. And it's been fulfilling to be a leader. I mean, it's not easy and I'm always working on it. Yeah. But when you can help other people get to their goals through your business, it's invaluable because it's a very fulfilling feeling when you can really help someone get to the next level by being on your team.
What's your culture look like there?
Hard work, consistency, and doing whatever it takes to win. So, which is pretty much the same thing as consistency. So everyone on my team, I don't need to tell them what to do. They already know that they need to be doing it. And I don't need to be like tapping them on the shoulder every day. Hey, did you do this? Hey, did you do that? Hey, did you do that? They're self-accountable, self-reliable people. And I brought them in, like my assistant, I actually found on WiseHire. So she came in through an actual job ad. Yeah. And my acquisitions person is a good friend of mine from high school who was working for another investor who just wanted a different change and a different opportunity. So I found him through a network.
The network. Yeah. Thinking back to before you hired anybody to begin with and where you're at now, how has your mentality changed as a leader?
You have to really care about the people on your team. You have to be selfless in a way. So I'll give you an example. I was telling Brett this. We were on a one-on-one call and I'm like, man, I really care about you guys. I genuinely care about having them succeed, right? And I really want them to win. And I know what their motivations are. And I know that I can help them get to where they want to go by providing an opportunity to be on the team. And it's never they work for me. It's never my business. It's our business. It's our team. We're on the same page. And I really care about their success. And I want to make sure that I push them in a way that's reasonable so that they can ultimately get to their goals. So you got to take like a selfless act. You got to have the right, you got to make sure that you hire the right people. You don't want to just hire people and hope they are the right ones. So like, I'm really big on like, is this opportunity? And that's the reason I was reluctant to hire people for a while, Neil, is I didn't know if I had an opportunity where I can have someone else really succeed and make real money. And I was gun shy about that for a while because I was doing really well, but I was a one-man show. I was feeding myself.
Right.
And it took me a couple of years to be like, can I really feed someone else? Can I provide a six-figure opportunity for them? Yep. And at the time, it was no for a while. And then after I started to realize we were running into these bottlenecks, you know, when it was just me and Anna, you know, it made sense to hire another team member. And it made sense to where, like, if they do well, they can make six figures plus in our organization. And I can, number one, help them get to their goals through my business. And if I help them get to their goals, inevitably I'll get to my goals. So it's kind of like, you got to be on the same page with a lot of stuff.
No, that's, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
Is there something that you do regularly, or maybe it's over a period of a year, to improve yourself as a leader? Maybe it's just the books you're reading, what you're consuming, who you hang around with. What is it that you're doing to level up your game as a leader?
Great question. So I actually invested in a leadership course called The Hero's Journey, put together by a guy named Darren Hardy, who's a popular success mentor. Yeah. He wrote a book called The Compound Effect and The Entrepreneur Roller Coaster. So I bought into his training last year. It was actually really good timing. So I've been going through that course all year. It's a year-long journey. Not easy. It's a lot of material. It's a bear to tackle. So I've been going through that. And at the same time, I have been mainly, you know, besides that actual curriculum course, I've been trying my best to lead by example and showing the team that I'm not going to be sitting up there in the press box, blowing the whistle, pointing all around. I'm going to be in the trenches fighting with them. And I think when they see, actually, I know when they see that from me, it motivates them more to be contributing even more and pushing harder and leading their own departments within our business. Because when they see me on a Saturday calling back leads when they're on vacation, which is fine, they know that number one, I got their back. And then when the week comes back, they got my back when I'm doing podcasts like this, or I'm going to Asia next month for a while or for a week, which is crazy. It's going to be, that's a 5-day
awesome.
For 5 days. I'm having a cup of coffee in Singapore and going back. But, you know, when I'm not in America, you know, they'll be holding the fort down for me. So, you know, you got to be able to lead by example. Yeah. And I heard a great quote from a guy named David Osborne. And he said, you know, when you first start, it's I do it. When you hire a small team, it's we do it. When your organization grows a lot bigger, it's they do it. And right now I'm in the we do it stage.
Yeah.
I have no problem staying here for a while because it's all about learning and figuring things out and demonstrating by example and communicating with them a lot. Like, I'm a big fan of communicating with my team, and we have daily huddles every morning at 8 a.m. And, you know, we're always going back and forth on Voxer, making sure we're on the same page. We're reviewing the leads, we're reviewing the transactions, and we have constant communication that's going on. So everyone's on the same page.
You follow EOS?
I don't. I read the book a few times, but I've never just executed it like to the T. It's something I should look into, because I remember, like, when I read Traction, I was a one-man show, and it made sense, but I was like, it's just me. Like, so maybe now would be a different vantage point.
Well, you know, have you read Rocket Fuel?
I have read Rocket Fuel.
All right. Well, that'd be good. It almost seems like you're sitting in, and I was there too, right? When you've got a smaller organization, you sit in the visionary role and
I'm the integrator too.
And the integrator. Yep. I mean, you just do it all, right? You're everything. Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. Well, let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call 4 for Impact.
4 for Impact.
Your favorite quote, there are no traffic jams on the extra mile. Brian Tracy said that. What about that resonates most with you?
You know, I really love that quote because it just goes to show that if you just show up and do a little bit extra, as Ed Milet would say, one more, that compounded over time is going to separate you from the rest of the pack. Because a lot of people, you know, I'll give you some real examples on that. A lot of people will just do what they need to do to get by. And that's a subscription to mediocrity and survival. So for example, if you're going to be a no traffic jams on the extra mile or a one more kind of person, it will separate you when you compound that every single day. So if I'm reading a book, I still do this every single day. If I'm reading a book for an hour, I take my timer out and I put one more minute on there and I read that extra freaking minute. If I'm making calls, which I do a lot of, if I got my calls done for the day, I'm going to make that extra call today, because when I stack that extra call up over a 365-day year, there's another $150,000 going to the bottom line. So, and it's just that mentality when you look at your efforts and you go that extra distance, no one else is really doing that. Everyone's going to just do the bare minimum or whatever's required to survive. And I don't want to survive. I want to thrive and succeed and be the exception. So that's just a principle that I personally live by.
We don't compete against markets. We only compete against other people. Other people doing the same thing, right? In the environment that we're in.
Yep.
All it takes is one more. Do one more.
Yeah. The Power of One More. That's another great book, by the way. Eddie Milet just came out with it, and I've read it a few times.
I haven't read it, but I did see it that it just came out.
So good. Yeah. So good. It just talking about that book, you can hear I'm fired up, man. I want to just go crank.
Yeah. What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
The weak self-image. It's a weak self-image. It's not having the internal belief that they can actually do it because they probably, as Ed Milet would say, didn't keep the promises they made to themselves and they don't truly believe that they can do it. So if they work on fixing their self-image or their identity, and this is all from Ed Milet, not from me, they'll be able to actually like say they're going to do something and then follow through with it. Because a lot of people, they want to make money in real estate. They want to quit their job. They want to do, et cetera. But they subconsciously sabotage themselves because they know they can't do it. Because they have not proven to themselves that they can do the actions every single day. If they just took their emotion out of it and said, I'm going to make these calls for an hour a day and I'm going to do this for 90 days straight, they're going to start to get their subconscious mind to believe that they're a person who's going to do what they say they're going to do. Therefore, they should get the results that they should get when they do the work. So that's kind of a high level pie in the sky thing, but I really think that is the separator because you could listen to a show like this or a show out there on the web. And the tactics are there. The information is there. You can pay a consultant and they can tell you exactly how to make six figures. But if you subconsciously don't think you can do it, you could have the best information coming from anyone and you'll find a way to self-sabotage yourself.
That can start with something small, can it not? To be the type of person who does what they commit to do. I mean, it could be as simple as, hey, I make my bed every day and then actually make your bed every day. And all of a sudden, you know, compounding, right? Over a period of time, you will self-reinforce, I am the type of person who does what I say I'm going to do.
And it translates. It'll translate to the real estate game.
That's exactly right. To anything you apply to, it does not matter.
It's almost so powerful, it gets missed. Because it's like, if you know deep down inside in your core that you are a person who is a winner, who's going to do what they say they're going to do, it doesn't matter what business you're in. If you're an insurance rep, you're going to go make 500 grand in the insurance business because you know you're going to commit to the process every day,
correct,
which over time with improvements and reflection will yield you the results you want to get because it's a proven model.
Correct. I think it gets overlooked because it feels too simple.
Exactly.
And people overcomplicate. They're like, you got to make $1 million by this? Like, it seems like it should be more difficult.
It's funny not. You say that, Neil. In our company, right, our entire business is we have all the tools and all that fancy stuff.
Yeah.
The critical factors are on a Google spreadsheet. How many leads came in today? How many offers got made? How many contracts got signed? How many closings happened? What was the revenue? That's our entire business on a freaking Google spreadsheet. And I look at it every day.
All we did was take the exact same factors and put it into a dashboard. They're the same five.
That's it. The whole business, man. It's all five. Right? People will call me sometimes and, you know, I'll get on the phone and chit chat and, you know, they're like, oh, I'm not getting any deals. And, you know, I'm like, how many offers did you make? And they're like, I haven't made an offer. I'm like, well, there you go. You got to make offers. And in order to make offers, you need to have leads.
Yeah.
In order to have leads, you have to commit to a certain traffic channel and you got to get good at that.
Correct.
You know, it's a simple business. It's not easy. You know that. I know that.
Yeah.
But if you really just do the basics every single day and you stack the momentum and you work on your self-image, you will be a machine in five. You will be a machine because you have committed to that process, which is going to get you those results.
Yes. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
There's a few things. I really like travel. I live in San Diego, but I also spend a lot of time in New York. I'm actually going to Asia next month, which is going to be cool for like a week. I play golf. I've been playing a lot of pickleball recently, an unreasonable amount of pickleball. So I like doing that. It's a way to just kind of unplug from work grind. And I like just experiencing cool stuff with people I care about.
Where are you going to in Asia?
I am going to Singapore.
Singapore. What's taking you there? Just for fun?
I was watching a YouTube video last Sunday and I said, I want to go here. And then I looked at my calendar in September and I said, I could easily justify like, oh, I'm too busy. Yeah. But I had nothing crazy planned. And I said, I'm going to Singapore. And I thought about it for about 4 days. And I said, by next Thursday, which was a week ago, almost a week ago, I said, I'm going to get myself a decision. And then I was like, I'm doing it. I booked the plane ticket, booked the hotel, and Helbeck is going to Singapore.
Are you going with anybody or just going
by my lonesome? Yeah.
Dude, that's
I'm so staying cool. at the hotel where there's the big infinity pool on yeah. top, overlooking it, like in the Hangover.
Yeah,
it's actually not that expensive.
I know where you're talking. Yeah, I recall the movie. Yes.
Yes, staying there. I'm excited,
dude. Wow. I can't wait to see the pictures.
I'm excited to show them to you.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Right now, I guess in the real estate community, it's putting out my social media content and my podcast show, because I've learned a lot over the years. I still got a lot to learn. I feel like if I can communicate my lessons to the audience that watches my stuff, it is a way to contribute. And, you know, when I get those messages once in a while from people saying, oh, I watched your video and I did a deal and it was amazing. Like that feels better than money. You know, when you can seriously find a way to impact people and share what you know, there's really no price tag you can put on it.
No, I agree with that. So for people who want to find you, they want to connect, they want to connect on the social media, where can they do it? How can they do
it? Yeah, the best way to do it is Instagram. So they follow me at Grego, Grego, like the letter. Yeah, the letter underscore 37. I put out daily social media content. You know, we got a great calendar of stuff we put out there. And that's the best way to get in touch with me.
That's awesome. I'll make sure we get that link added to the show notes below. Now, we've just launched the Real Grit Vault. It's a collection of resources available to all of our listeners here. We just launched this for all those listening. You can get it at www.realgrit.com/vault. Greg, what's your contribution to our vault?
I would love to give your vault my 6-step checklist. I believe I emailed it to you, or put it in the link. So it's basically a template, a visual of what I talked about 20 minutes ago with how to really find out who's motivated and who's not motivated. So I'd love the listeners to take advantage of that, and it'll help their conversations be more productive.
That's a wonderful contribution. I thank you. And for everybody out there, www.realgrit.com/vault, totally free. And you can get that resource there. Greg, I appreciate you taking the time and to connect up here. You've got an amazing story, tremendous passion for this industry. And like you said, I mean, you really do put out some high quality content, and you delivered today. I mean, you give us, there's a lot of gold nuggets in today's show, what somebody can take and put into immediate action. And you know, it starts with the mindset, and then all the tactical stuff actually is really pretty darn simple.
Absolutely. Well, Neil, you're a great interviewer. Don't tell anyone on my podcast team, but I'd rather be a guest than a host. Keep that secret. But you did a great job, and it was just awesome to be on the show and be able to serve your audience. So thank you so much for having me.
That's kind. Yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, for everybody here, Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons, reminding that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. What if I told you can make 20 times the return of a single family fix and flip on your next big deal? Well, it's actually possible. It's possible inside the world of commercial real estate. Say, I'm inviting you to this free challenge. It starts August 15th. It's totally free. It's a 5-day challenge where I'm going to take you and deep dive into the world of commercial real estate, more specifically, capital multiplier properties. What it is, how we identify them. I'm going to show you how to identify them, how to evaluate them, and how to lock them up risk-free. I'm going to give you all the paperwork to do it. It's totally free. You can sign up to join us at www.20xprofitchallenge.com/realgrit. That's www.20xprofitchallenge.com/realgrit. And I'll see you in the challenge.